It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, strange love a star woman teaches. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Hey, did you guys know that the Star Trek theme has lyrics to it?
What?
That's what I just quoted.
What?
Yeah.
Lyrics?
Oh, yeah. Nichelle Nichols does a great version of it sometime. Aww. I'll play it for you guys.
I'm sure she does, because when she does things, they're great things.
Hey, you know why I brought up Star Trek?
Why?
Because we're talking about stun technology today. In a, you know, in science fiction, we see it all the time, right? Star Trek does it. Star Wars does it.
Well, it depends on what science fiction you're watching, because if I recall correctly, Star Wars does it once ever.
Yeah.
But, when it was to a main character, a.k.a. Princess Leia,
but it was
they kind of wanted to keep around.
It was also the once ever. When a stormtrooper was able to hit something, so it's obviously significant. Because in every other instance I can remember of a stormtrooper firing, with the exception of the nameless guys who die at the very beginning of episode four, they don't hit anything.
Well, maybe they're all pacifists.
Yeah, no, could be. Lauren makes a good point. It's because stormtroopers are always shooting at the main characters who are not supposed to die.
Oh, so you're saying that they're protected by plot significance.
Exactly.
I gotta get me some of that.
They have plot shields. But okay, so if you'll recall, at the beginning of Star Wars A New Hope, Princess Leia's chilling in her Corvette, and the stormtroopers come on, and they say, there's one set for stun. And she blasts one of them, I guess kills him.
Yeah,
and then they're
she didn't get the memo.
And then they shoot her with, they don't look like those normal, you know, blaster bolts. They're these rings that come out of the gun.
That's how you know it's stun.
Yeah, right. So the rings come out, and then she just falls over like, she's just taking a little nap.
So yeah, stun technology, right? I mean, that's the whole idea, is you incapacitate your target without killing him or her.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. So it's a form of science fiction non-lethal warfare. I don't know. Maybe not warfare. Yeah, non-lethal. It's designed to incapacitate or paralyze someone.
It's a good humane way of putting someone who's being unreasonable out of the plot line.
Or if you need to, you know, take them on board your ship so that you can torture them to discover the location of the rebel base.
But to humanely take them onto your ship
so you can torture them and find out the location of the rebel base.
Well,
there's a very weird Geneva Convention that guided the Imperial
actions
in that film.
I'm not sure if the Imperial forces were really following.
I don't know. At any rate, anyway, in Star Trek, we had it as well, where the
phaser
a lot more prevalent
done.
There.
And, right. and clearly, the crew of the Enterprise was all about exploring the universe and learning about it, not killing everything that came across its path.
Not everything.
They did some killing.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, but only after like 8 or 9 red shirts died. So really, yeah. It was just kind of an eye for an eye thing.
After either Kirk or Riker had slept with it. So
there you go. Okay, yeah, depending upon whether we're talking original series or Next Generation, that's fair.
Yeah.
So
okay, but so I just kind of, I don't know about y'all, I kind of grew up believing that this had some real life analogy.
Well, let's talk about, all right, Lauren, I know you've looked into the biology of what we human beings work on and stuff and like the gooey mess that keeps us going. What exactly, how would stun technology interact with a body to incapacitate us in some way?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so your body uses electrical signals to get things done. Your brain communicates with your nerves via electrical signals and those signals spur the release of neurotransmitter chemicals that control your muscles.
Gotcha.
So we are walking squishy electrical systems is really what's going on. And the idea of modern stun guns, anyway, is to disrupt those electrical communication systems.
So you're kind of overloading the electrical grid of a human being.
Right. Which is a pretty effective way of doing it. You know, you can hypothetically also, you literally can also use chemicals that are going to either be unpleasant enough to make you stop doing what you are doing temporarily, or you could, if you wanted to be kind of smart about it, or very dangerous about it, depending on the situation, use neurotransmitter chemicals or otherwise disrupt that process to make that mess up on
gotcha.
That level.
Gotcha. So in other words, we're talking about just interrupting the body's communication system between
one
the nervous
way or
system
another,
and something
and,
else.
And the muscular system,
right, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this case, we're talking about using high voltage, low amperage kinds of...
Right, on modern existing stun weapons.
Yeah.
That's what we're aiming to do. And so what does a high voltage, low amperage...
So if you want to think about electricity kind of like water... that's helpful when you're talking about voltage. Voltage is pressure. That's how much water pressure, like if you were to look at a water system, it's kind of analogous to that. Voltage is how much oomph you've got behind it. Amperage is sort of the intensity of that electrical current. And I know those two things sound a little confusing, but essentially if you have high voltage and low amperage, it is, for a given definition of the word safe, in that it'll pack a wallop and it'll make your nervous system kind of go into a little bit of a short-term freakout mode, but it shouldn't cause lasting damage for your average healthy human. But if you had high amperage, that's deadly stuff.
Right. Okay. So what this means is that This is gonna really affect you in two different ways. In the body, this current can mimic the pulse frequency of the electrical signals that you're getting from your brain, which can make the body's muscles, and this is the technical term, crazy go nuts.
Right.
It's you're talking about involuntary muscle contractions, and at the standard 60 hertz or so, it's going to occur with shocks of between 6 and 16 milliamps. This is a little bit painful, and the main action of it is that, as opposed to extreme pain, which I can talk about a little bit later.
I can talk about how painful it is from personal experience.
You have been shocked with a
I've been
personal
hit by a stun gun.
Now you
want to know the story.
Trying to get too close to Brent Spiner at a convention, and...
It was Jonathan Frakes, and you know it. No, that's not the case. And Joe knows this story because I've already related it earlier today. But what happened was I was at a camping event and a bunch of people sitting around a campfire, and the discussion turned to, you know, non-lethal weapons, as it does on your typical camping trip.
Yeah, it does on mine. Yeah.
In case Jason Voorhees comes out of the woods, you need to find some way of slowing him down so he gets the weaker of the group so the rest of you can get away.
So why didn't you bring a magic dagger with you?
It turned out that I did not have a magical dagger. In fact, right now we don't even have our mystical axe.
Oh, we don't.
Yeah, yeah.
The powers of the taiga are not with us.
At any rate, so what happened was one of the people there had a stun gun and explained that the juice had run down quite a bit to the point where it was no longer really an effective deterrent in any sense, and then demonstrated by stun gunning himself in the leg. And just made his leg twitch a little bit, and he said, "See, it's not even really effective." And then the person next to him said, "Let me see that," and took it and went, and went, "Ow, yeah, it kind of hurts, but that's it." And then the next person said, "Let me see that." And I was about two more people down the line, and of course, by then I'm like, well, the peer pressure has already gained to the point where I cannot just, no thanks, and hand it to the next person. So I also did it. It felt like kind of a bee sting, and it made my muscles in my thigh contract. But like I said, the juice in this one, the voltage was much lower than what it should have been to be a true deterrent. So at this point, our decision was that if any attacker were hit by this thing, it would only encourage them to hurt you more.
It would really only make them angry.
Yeah.
What you're really looking to do with a stun gun is to deplete a person's muscular energy reserves with these contractions, therefore making them temporarily too weak to move.
Right.
And secondly, the current in the brain, it can introduce kind of like random noise into the brain's ordered signal system, and that can cause a sense of confusion and off-balanceness, a sort of temporary mental paralysis.
So this is kind of like the concept of getting interference on a radio signal.
Exactly.
You know, it's where you're still getting a signal through, but you might have a competing signal that's coming in on it, and it starts getting all jumbled. Well, that's sort of the same sort of thing. It's like, you know, you've kind of done a little power surge in the body, and your brain can't quite handle it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that covers the electrical system. On the chemical end, you know, today we use stuff like tear gas and pepper spray sometimes in terms of attacker or crowd control. And the idea is that these chemicals are strong but non-lethal irritants, more precisely mucous membrane inflammatory agents,
yeah,
which are going to cause pain, eye swelling to the point of swelling shut for 15 to 30 minutes, and throat and nose swelling that can impair breathing for about 5 to 13 minutes. And I do have the names of the two most common tear gases in use if you guys really want to torture me and everyone else by saying 17-syllable chemical compounds.
I don't think that's necessary. I think we get the point. Yeah, and really, when you get down to it, these chemicals aren't so much stunning people as convincing them they want to be anywhere other than where they are right then at that moment.
Now, those nerve agents, the kind of things that we saw in Syria, work by inhibiting an enzyme that breaks down the neurotransmitter that's released to signal muscles to contract. Therefore, they prevent muscles from relaxing, which leads to a lot of really nasty stuff, but most critically to suffocation.
Yeah, that's not...
Which isn't
again,
really a stun, you know, kind
right,
of
yeah,
issue.
Yeah, we're looking for non-lethal stun technology, the sort of stuff we see in Star Trek. That's clearly not the case. So,
right. Most of the time when you're talking about messing with neurotoxins, it's going to be on the level of death pretty soon.
Yeah.
Not this... Yeah.
So do we have anything that's a little bit closer to what this stun technology would be like? I mean,
well,
is there a way to zap somebody and knock them out?
Yeah,
without hurting them?
Well, now you made it tricky. I was ready to talk about it, and then you made it more difficult. Okay, so stun guns are kind of the basic unit we need to talk about. And I chatted about it a second ago when I talked about stunning myself in the leg like an idiot. By the way, just in my defense, I was a stupid teenager at the time. All right.
So, yeah. Also, kids, don't use stun guns on yourselves.
No.
Okay?
That's, no.
It's not a good plan. Don't be like Jonathan.
Don't be like me. I mean, look at me. I stunned myself in the leg and became an incredibly successful and famous person. So don't do that. Those two things, by the way, not, no causation there. just keep that in mind. I had not told that story for like 15 years. So, at any rate, the stun gun is your sort of basic stun weapon. And it's kind of a bad name for it, stun gun, because it is not the same effect as you would imagine a stun phaser. Like, it doesn't harmlessly render someone unconscious. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, like in Star Trek, not only are they just harmlessly rendered unconscious, they slump over in such a way that doesn't cause them physical damage.
Yeah, they kind of sit down.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone actually lose consciousness while upright. It is nothing like that.
Sometimes there are loud sounds when, like, skull bone hits the ground.
Yeah, yeah, it's not good. So anyway, the basic stun gun is designed where you have two sets of electrodes, generally speaking, an outer set and an inner set, meaning that there are two that are closer together and two that are further apart. The two that are further apart are the ones that are actually designed to make contact with your target. The two that are closer together are meant to allow sparks to spark, thus acting as a deterrent. So if I hold up a stun gun, not all of them have these two sets, by the way, but a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. So if I hold up a stun gun and I hit the button and you hear that noise and you see the sparks going across,
yeah,
that's just
for show.
It's meant to be intimidating.
That's like a rattlesnake, yeah.
It's really meant to for the person who's wielding it to say, please, please, please don't make me use this, because it's not going to be pleasant for you. The outer set of electrodes are what would actually pass the electric current through the body of the target. So you've also got a capacitor. Now, capacitors are very useful in electronics. They store up energy and then release it all at once. So they're different from batteries. Batteries release energy gradually through a chemical, we talk about it as being a chemical reaction that releases electricity. A capacitor stores up electricity and then releases it all at once. There are a lot of electronics that use capacitors. For example, your camera flash uses a capacitor. Mm-hmm. Because, you want that energy released in a very quick burst to get that flash. Otherwise, the light would come on slowly and then go off slowly and not be useful for photographs. So, in this case, the capacitor is there so that you can actually release a shock all at once to the target. You have a battery that actually stores the electricity. Usually you get a certain number of charges. Each charge tends to be a little weaker than the one before it until you can recharge to full or replace the battery.
They're usually a standard 9-volt battery, I think.
Yeah, 9-volt battery is pretty common. They also have oscillators that fluctuate the current to provide pulses of electricity, and the pulses of electricity are what create that pattern that makes muscles wear out faster, because they contract for while the pulse is going, then they stop and then they contract again, and it's really, really rapid, so it exhausts the muscle very quickly. So that's your basic stun gun, but there are, of course, some variations. There's the taser, which is actually named after a science fiction weapon.
Right.
But the taser is adds another element to your basic stun gun, which is that it has a little air canister in it that allows it to project those electrodes out from the base unit, and they are connected to the base unit by wires. So that means you can actually have a range to this thing, as opposed to just being, face to face with whoever you are trying to zap.
Mm-hmm.
They could be 15 feet away and it fires, the electrodes attached to the target. And it's about as pleasant as it sounds. And then electricity passes through the wires to the electrodes and causes the target to go through the same convulsion
series.
Right,
right. So in all of these cases, you need physical contact of some kind. It's not like a Star Trek phaser where,
there's a ray that comes out.
There's a ray and you can be a long way away. You have to physically make contact so that these electrodes can use the person that you are using it on as the connection point.
Yeah, it's completing the circuit. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Thank you.
So, the handheld unit has like all the battery and everything in it. So you can actually usually, at least with the taser one, you can administer additional shock if you have to. In other words, if someone is still being combative and you in a danger to either themselves or to other people, then you can administer another couple of zaps. Pretty serious stuff. But I mean, even that, you're still talking about a range of 10 to 15 feet, maybe. If you want to go beyond that, then you could look at their shotgun taser, which is a pretty interesting piece of technology. I got to see it at CES before it was rolled out as an actual product. They were showing it off as the prototype stage. Absolutely fascinating technology. Very scary stuff, too, obviously, because you think about this. Now, less scary, I would say, than an actual shotgun blast. But,
yes.
So imagine a shotgun shell, but instead of it having shot inside of it, it has this little plastic device that's got two electrodes on the end of it. And when you fire it, little fins pop out to stabilize its flight, and it flies to its target. Once it impacts the target, the back half of this device separates and it's connected to the front half that has the electrodes by wires. So in a way, it's like having a handheld taser unit, but it's miniaturized and it's all on the target.
And it's like you throw, if you were going to throw the taser at someone instead of...
So the wires are not insulated. So in other words, if you reach to try and pull the taser unit off of yourself, you're going to get shocked by the wires too. And it also has enough juice in it to administer several pulses of electricity through it to render the target immobile. So, it's I'll put it this way. It's effective.
So this sounds, though, I guess intended to be not lethal, somehow not quite as humane as the spick and span Star Trek stun gun.
Well, I mean, I would say, if you're talking about humane, as in the target experiences no discomfort or pain, then obviously this is not that same world. We're talking about two totally different things here. It's an incredibly tricky situation, because if you're talking about situations where there are a lot of people out of control and they are a potential threat to innocent bystanders, and yet they themselves are not necessarily criminals or otherwise dangerous. It's just the situation has gotten out of control. What are people who are supposed to keep the peace to do about that kind of situation that minimizes the impact of their own actions, keeping things in control, limiting the damage that's done? It's a really tricky problem. I don't know that stun technology is necessarily the right approach for that, but it's at least an attempt for people to try and find a way of dealing with something that is truly a sticky situation.
Right. And electrical stun technology in particular is very tricky, because you're working with within very limited parameters of what is going to be effective without being permanently damaging.
Sure.
You know, it's... And the exact numbers can vary depending on what source you're looking at, but about 1 to 2 milliamps is the threshold of human perception. You're going to feel a tingle, but it's not really going to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
Below 5 milliamps, most people retain control of their muscles. That's probably about what you guys were delivering to each other with that stun gun way back
when. Yeah, maybe a little bit more, but not by much.
6 to 16 is the range at which most electrical stun weapons fall into.
Mm-hmm.
If you go above that, you're going to involve a lot of pain and risk throwing the person into respiratory arrest or paralysis. And death can even occur at this range, depending on the length of the shock that's delivered. When you get up above 100 milliamps, you're going to risk ventricular fibrillation, which is erratic or uncontrolled heartbeats.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, to add to the complexity of this issue and the fact that stun technology, while, you know, the premise is something that I think is easily agreeable, like the idea of a technology that can incapacitate a potentially dangerous target humanely, I think that, you know, most people would say, well, that's something I think would be good, because it may be a weird set of circumstances that brought this all about, and you don't want to necessarily use lethal force or hurt the person, but you definitely want to stop them from being able to hurt someone else. I mean, that part I agree with. Yeah, these are real problems that we face, and, you know, there are other ones too that are, you know, different levels of, they give me different levels of squick. There are riot shields that have capacitive strips on them that can administer a shock. So for riot control, that would be used. There are other ones that, there's one type of riot shield. It's called, let's see, I think I actually had written down what it was called. It's cell extraction shields or capture shields. So imagine a riot shield, but the curve is in the opposite direction of what it normally is. So instead of being convex, it's concave. So meaning that since it's concave, you could use it to corral someone using the capacitive, bands on it. And so these are things that are troubling. Now, at the same time, it's also troubling to think of people who have to deal with truly violent offenders, and how do you do that in a way that keeps the person who has to, you know, deal with this person safe? Like, how do you do that in a way where the guards not put in physical danger, while still being as humane as possible in the dealing of prisoners. This is tough stuff. I mean, obviously this is not an easy thing to talk about. And then there was one other stun technology I wanted to talk about before we get into some of the future stuff. Actually, two I'll talk about. One is, flashbang grenades. You guys have heard about this, right? I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, they're used in video games. You see them in movies. They do exist. They're meant to give off a bright flash of light and a loud noise to disorient the targets. So,
like, I'm sure they're 100% harmless.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, like in the movies, you might see something like a team of bank robbers, and one of them tosses a flashbang grenade into a bank, and it immediately disorients everyone, and then they rush in. Or it could be a task force that's about to come in on a criminal gang, and they toss one in, and it ends up causing enough confusion for them to execute a maneuver or whatever. In truth, these things can cause massive amounts of damage. I mean, they are explosives. They're meant to just do light and sound, really, but there's a concussive force that goes along with that. So I've seen some videos of, like training video where someone was using a flashbang grenade within a hallway that, like an office hallway, and they tossed it into the room, and the explosion was so great that all of the ceiling tiles fell in on the team outside in the hallway.
My goodness.
Yeah. So that would be disorienting for both the people in the room and the people who are out in the hallway that are supposed to be ready to rush in. That's a obviously danger. Anytime you're using concussive force to knock someone out, that is dangerous. A concussion, essentially, any sort of concussive force attack is essentially you're accelerating the skull so that the brain collides with the inside of the skull, and that can cause permanent nerve and brain damage.
It's sort of like hitting them on the head.
Yeah, it's the old knock them on the head with a hammer cartoon thing.
We would like to note for the record that whenever you see in perhaps your favorite television show someone knocking out especially a friend of theirs for some brief period of time by just cracking them one on the noggin, that's a bad plan.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
No, that can cause permanent damage.
Yeah.
I mean you're talking about making the brain collide with the skull so that it shorts out the nervous system. That's essentially what you're talking about. So anything with concussive force is already by its very nature not, you know, it's not harmless. It's going to cause some form of harm. It may be temporary, but it could be permanent. And then the last one I'm going to talk about, which is, you know, less harmful. It's more truly disorienting and not, I don't really consider it a stun technology as so much as, again, something that just truly disorients the target, is using light, high intensity light. So, for example, Genesis Illumination developed a strobe light that uses powerful lights to create a disorienting effect that's effective up to 150 feet away. And they use xenon gas plasma bulbs to generate the light. And, like a car headlight when it's on high. This thing's about 23 times more intense than that.
Ouch. Okay.
So intense that if someone were pointing one at you and you were a mile away, you could read by it in the middle of the night. That's how bright this thing is. So the idea is that you shine it at the target, and it's so bright that the target cannot look in that direction at all, and it's disorienting. So if you are behind the light, then you're essentially invisible to that person because they cannot see due to that light. So that's one that, it's a deterrent for the person to behave in a particular way, but not truly a stun technology.
Sensory overload, but not a physical overload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that kind of catches us up on the technology being used right now, and obviously this is not ideal, because, like we said, we would love to have the technology that would,
This is kind of grim. Does the future hold anything perhaps less terrifying?
Well, I was trying to think of what might be more similar to the actual style of stun phaser we see in, say, Star Trek, which, if y'all recall, is a directed energy weapon.
Right.
You know, so what we're talking about mostly is like stun guns where you have to stick somebody with something and pump a current through them.
Yeah, you have to have a physical contact with something that's generating electricity.
Yeah, so that's one part of it. Also, as we've just been discussing, it is potentially painful and potentially dangerous. So it's not as clean as the Star Trek portrayal. Is there anything like that? Well, short answer, as far as I can tell, no.
Now, keep in mind, there's stuff that's classified that we can't know about.
So there may be things like this in development. There may be things like this we discover in the future. But But here's a few things I found that are sort of getting close. As far as the directed energy weapon goes, I mean, one thing about the stun setting on the phaser in Star Trek is that you can be pretty far away.
Yeah.
And you can zap somebody and put them out that way. Is there anything like that? Like a sort of blast?
Like, well, a good range weapon.
Yeah. So in 2005, the U.S. Department of Defense announced that they developed a thing called a personal halting and stimulation response rifle. So that was the phaser.
Okay.
Acronym there. Phaser without an E. So it's like faster.
Gotcha.
And basically this would be a low energy pulsing laser. And what they claim is that it was a non-lethal, non-permanent blinding effect. So it would temporarily blind the enemy or the victim or whatever you would call them, blind someone temporarily without permanent damage, and that would incapacitate them. Now, again, that's not the same thing as a stun phaser,
right? It's along the lines of Jonathan's.
Yeah, the strobe light. Bright light. That's meant to disorient. Yeah.
It would simply, the quote they used was dazzle the victim.
Like a mutant from X-Men.
Yeah. The funny thing, though, was that there was a little buzz about this when it came out, but I haven't read a whole lot about it since then. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't introduce paralysis or unconsciousness. Also, it sounds a little fishy. Like, I'd be worried that the purveyors of this technology might be a little overly sanguine about its supposed harmlessness.
Gotcha.
Right. I'd say that in general, the inventors of things like this are more willing to sign off on the safety than perhaps entire teams of third parties that are, you know, a little bit more...
That aren't directly interested in whether or not the project succeeds or fails?
Yeah, that one.
That's a sort of, at least that is directed energy, right?
Right.
So that'd be a laser
kind
of thing. You could do it at a distance, and it would be non-lethal and supposedly not cause any permanent damage.
Okay.
But on the other side, wouldn't knock you unconscious, and don't know how actually non-damaging
it is. All right, well, what else you got?
Mm-hmm. There's the active denial system.
Okay, what's this?
Have you
this?
Heard about this?
I have not, but that sounds amazing. I go through active denial every day.
It's a combination of amazing and messed up.
Okay, hit me with it.
So basically, this is an idea of incapacitating people, but again, it's not going to make them unconscious. The idea is that you blast a sort of focused beam of millimeter wave radiation.
Okay.
What's
the effect when it hits you?
It causes intense non-damaging pain.
So did
is
that
what
guy
they say.
Tell you guys about the time I went camping and hit myself with an active denial system ray? I mean, it was going around the whole group, and I thought, well, okay.
It was low power anyway.
I've actually seen one of these in not personally. I have seen one of these used in a video where it was something similar to this anyway. It may not have been this specific implementation you're talking about, but there was a reporter who was talking about this technology and was being shown how it works. And the reporter was first told to stand in this one position. They were going to turn the ray on him. The ray, by the way, was this connected to a big truck. It was not what you would call portable.
Not portable. Okay.
Not portable in the sense of a single person. A team could move it around.
Sure.
But anyway, the ray was directed at him, and he immediately needed to jump out of the way. So that was like a kind of a very hot sensation that he, like, it was just too hot to
bear.
To stand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then they gave him various types of stuff to hold in front of him as he would advance on the position of the ray to see, like, if
like
perhaps
what
that would
help misdirect
it. Yeah, so he had, like, plywood or a mattress or all this other kind of stuff. Because, again, this was a sort of a riot dispersal sort of tool.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't do that either. He couldn't withstand it much longer than he could if it was just standing there. And he was wearing, you know, it was a cold day, so he was wearing layers of clothing, too. Mm-hmm. It was clear that this thing worked quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, interesting in that it's directed energy. So you can do it at a distance. It is non-lethal. But some similar objections as the other one. It's not going to render you unconscious. The ethics of it are a little questionable in that it is intentionally meant to cause pain.
Intense pain.
Right. Yeah. The same way that tear gas or something like that is meant to cause you such extreme discomfort that you want to be anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think there's also a question, even though it's generally agreed to be non-lethal, there's a question of, well, I mean, could it in some could it in some cases cause injury?
Yeah. Could there be cell mutation that could lead to very serious problems down the line? I mean, you're talking about things that could potentially have implications years later.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. So we've got pain and we've got light. Is there anything else out there?
There's another light one, actually.
Okay.
But it'd still be directed energy. It's a version of... y'all remember in Minority Report, the sick stick?
Yeah, yeah.
I have no memory of this, actually. I remember Minority Report, but for some reason this is not coming back to me.
It's a non-lethal weapon where basically it's designed to, instead of injuring you, just to make you sick.
Oh, I see. Become nauseated.
Yeah, it incapacitates you by making you double over with nausea and vomiting and dizziness.
Mm-hmm. Fun times.
Yeah, and so that's... In a way, it's similar to active denial, you might say, in that it's supposed to cause you discomfort that makes it unable for you to continue doing whatever you're doing.
Right, it just immediately gives you the after effects of a frat party.
Yeah, but without injuring you in any permanent way.
Unlike the after effects of a frat party.
Right. apparently you can sort of recreate some of this experience by creating what some people have, which is a display of pulsing LED lights, and
okay.
If you have them pulse at different frequencies
it
that
can
are
actually
tuned
cause...
just right, it'll sort of cause waves of seasickness to wash over.
I was about to say, I know people who replicate this effect on a weekly basis, but they do it voluntarily.
That's another one. So that would be directed energy. It'd be light at a distance. And supposedly, if you could get this to work really well, you could incapacitate someone with a wave of sickness just by light. So that's interesting. But again, it's not quite as clean as Star Trek.
No.
I mean, it's not nice to make people double over with vomiting. might be preferable to killing them, I guess.
I guess, but it's still a little bit less than humane.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to a directed energy weapon that just shoots internet cat memes into the eyes of the attacker, so they just stop and go, aw.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder if there could be like a procrastination gun, so that whenever somebody has designs to do something really bad, like they're running at you with a knife, you display images that make them really distracted and want to click. You know?
Well, the problem is that there is a procrastination gun, but you can't actually fire it because you always put it off till later.
I think that this will have great application when we all have Google Glass and et cetera wired directly into our brains. So.
Oh, yeah. Somebody could, hack your vision.
Yeah. And just send you straight to the, cute ducks riding Roombas channel or something. And you'd just be
that's
like...
That's a great channel.
It would just be that for the next 3 hours. Suddenly, we'd just go, I was going to commit violence.
The only thing better is cute ducks riding Doombas.
Oh, no. We're back to the dark place again, guys.
All right. Let's get out of this. All right. Do you have anything other than the various forms of ridiculous?
No, so I just wanted to report after all that I, as far as I know, there's nothing like a phaser set to stun out there. There is no such technology that we know of, and I haven't even really found anybody saying, here's how it might be done.
Well, here's what how I want to wrap this up. I mean, first of all, obviously, if we have to have these kind of tools, then I would prefer it if we could find a way where we could have that wonderful Star Trek approach where, you know.
Where it is safe and you just gently kind of sit down.
Right. And then you wake up and you're in the holding cell until you're calmed down and then everything's okay.
Uh-huh.
Or you're, you know, Khan and you end up taking over the Enterprise from the holding cell. Whatever.
Either way.
But what I really hope is that we can strive for a future where this sort of becomes a moot point anyway, where we don't even need to worry about this kind of thing because we've gotten to a point where we're able to have conversations and work things out. And I mean, obviously that's like the touchy-feely Star Trek future, but that's one I really strive for.
That there aren't the kind of socioeconomic factors that drive the kind of riots that make this sort of
exactly. We're talking about a world that is dramatically different from the one we have. And I think it's one that I honestly think it really is something that is attainable if we really put our minds to it. And, you know, that certainly can sound a little Pollyannish to some people, but I don't care. You know what? I'm reading Jim Henson's biography and it's really affecting me.
Aww.
So, if the dude thought that puppets could change the world, I think, you know, why don't we all give that a shot? So we've had some fun talking about this. And of course, we've also addressed the very real concerns about this kind of technology. But ultimately, it's one of those that we hope eventually phases out. See how I did the phase thing?
I did. Yeah. I see exactly what you did there.
Well, that wraps up this discussion of forward thinking. Guys, go to fwthinking.com. That is the website where we have all the blog posts, the videos, the podcasts, and other material related to the things we talk about. Check that out. We're really proud of it. There's some awesome stuff there. And also, join in on the conversation. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+. Just look for FW Thinking. Let us know what you think. Let us know what's exciting to you about the future, what you want to hear about. We want to hear from you. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.